about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
To infinity and beyond.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking, don't they?
It's classified.
You talking to me?
I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
I can't lie!
Expecto Patronum!
Entertainment X.
You never know what you're gonna get.
For this episode, I sit down with the one and only Matthew Baker. Matthew and I go all the way back, actually, to my first professional gig on Disney Cruise Line, and I remember then marveling at his professionalism in the gym and in the studio, and it's so wonderful to actually sit down with the guy and see what keeps him moving forward, what his thought process is with his workouts and his rehearsals for theater. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and keep on keeping on. We're back. I'm Clayton Howe, and today with me, in the flesh, Matthew Baker.
Hello, hello.
Matthew, everyone's going to love listening to this episode because of your sensual dialect. Mm. This is going to be fun. Okay, so we met 2015?
Yes, 2015.
Disney Cruise Line.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah, it was so much fun.
It was, yeah.
It was so incredible. I remember we were in rehearsal, must have been day one assessments, and seeing you and your wife, Dorothy, show up and show out across the floor was just, I was like, oh, I'm in the big time now. Because you guys are really freaking talented. And
we're not going to
spend the whole episode talking about that.
Yeah.
And people who have listened before know that I don't gush like a fan.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So let's get down to it, dude.
Yeah.
I want to start. We have a bunch of segments we're going to talk about here today. It's going to be like fitness, dance, life, paths, career, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Rewinding back to the beginning of time for Matthew Baker, and we'll start with dance. What was the decision there? Was that your call or was that family?
Definitely not. yeah. My mother actually took my older sister dancing when she was younger. And just lo and behold, another young guy his mother wanted him to dance. We were only three at the time, us boys, and my sister was five.
Where was this in the world?
This was back in Kent, where I'm from.
Great.
In England, yeah. And so she was pushing and pushing for my mom to get me to go with this young lad to the dance class. I think it was ballet. But yeah, like we were 3 years old. And so eventually he gave in because he had a friend to go with, right? And then I guess the next week he never turned up and I just kept going. It was literally that simple. And yeah, the rest is history. I just, you know, it's, once you get used to something, you just keep doing it, you know?
Was this ballet, jazz?
This was ballet. And then I think after about 6 months, I took up a little bit of tap. There was a little bit of jazz in there as well, but at that young age, it was kind of just like ballet and tap.
Mm.
But yeah, I guess I found a knack for it.
Were you doing sports?
Yeah, yes and no. Like at school.
I mean, at three, kids aren't really playing football.
I mean,
or American football.
Yes. Soccer.
Soccer.
Yeah, no, I played football. I wasn't very good at it, but I think, you know, that's why I gravitated more towards performing at that young age.
Yeah. When did theater start?
Theater professionally started, well.
Or at all, like when did you do a show?
Yeah, so I did, you know, we did dance recitals and dance competitions growing up. And I think my mum would probably attest to this. When I was around 15, thinking about going to college professionally for musical theater, I started getting that kind of drive to want to not necessarily beat people, but you know, the competition part was there and I was like, I need to find my place in this world of theater. And that's when I really got the passion for it. And I was like, you know what? I hadn't really thought about it until this point, but I think this is what I want to do with my life. So, and then 16 rolled around.
But that was all in school or was that like a community player's house or something?
No, that was like while I was at school and we did competitions at weekends or whatever. It was kind of through that.
Okay.
And then, you know, you roll around 16 in the UK, you can go off to an independent college. You can't go to university till you're 18. But so I was auditioning for, you know, performing arts / musical theater colleges. And yeah, that's kind of where the professional career began.
And we're going to get a lot into fitness, as I said before. So just for continuity purposes here, you're still a beanpole at that point.
Yes.
You hadn't really started the heavy lifting.
Scraggedy beanpole.
no, because like, yeah, I mean, well, they'll see with, you know, a little cover photo or whatever for the episode.
Yeah,
maybe we'll grab one of the shirtless ones for them. It's like, you're, you know, you've got definition and size, as
yeah,
they say.
It took time. It took brain power and willpower. And
was that at 20
or that before? Was, I think around 20, 21, 22 is when I started taking things seriously. And that was when I was away on one of my first cruise contracts. But yeah, up until that point, I was just slim and slender, 6 foot beanpole, as you say.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, you're physically fit, you know, cause at college I was 9 till 5 pretty much every day. Dancing was maybe 80% of that. Singing and acting were definitely part of it, but, our bodies were physical pretty much all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was then, what was the studying for college? Where did you study?
I studied at Bird College in Sidcup, which is technically in Kent, but most people say London. Yeah.
And you were done by age
18. I was out by 18. Yeah. And just shy of my 19th birthday.
Okay. So that's, this is something that I didn't know.
Yeah. I could have stayed on at school, at my grammar school and studied a little bit more into music, maybe, you know, the technical side of music production, things like that. But there was nothing practically that I could have done in my area that would have excelled me into the world of theater that was going to be inevitably my life.
So am I hearing that you kind of skipped a grade? Grades?
Not really.
Or not really?
No, because you can leave school at 16. Or that you could do 2 more years, which is called the A-levels, which then would project you going on to university if you wanted to study more academics. But, you know, in our field, I think the best thing is to learn what you can in your body. You know, the best way to do that is practically. And I couldn't do that staying at school.
Especially if you're a dancer.
Yeah, 100%. You need to be physically active to be doing that. You know, it's in our bodies. It's not in our minds and through a textbook.
So at 18, where are you working?
18, left college, and then like everybody, you're the lone lost sheep going out in the world.
In London?
Auditioning in London, yeah. It's tough because you're finding your way. And realistically, you know, I had few people that could really guide me into, you know, where we were going. It was my class of, I think, 20 boys, not even. And then I think maybe 2/3 of that, so it's like 30 girls. We were all out in the world figuring it out for ourselves. We had workshops at college with the teachers and industry professionals that would come in, but for the most part it was, you know, you had to find your own way, which is what a lot of people still do, you know. But I definitely wish I had someone that could have given me some tidbits along the way.
Yeah. So I'm assuming in London you booked your first gig.
Yeah. So, you know, you scramble for agents before you come out of college and you kind of invite them to your final performance at your college production. And we had that, you know, we had all of that. I got my first gig, which was Sweeney Todd in London, just through, you know, writing. And you know, you can download magazines and things like that.
Right.
Like we have out here.
Like, you know, Backstage,
like
or something
Backstage,
like that.
Exactly like that.
Inside the Pineapple. Playbill.
Yeah, exactly. Inside a Pineapple, yeah. And I saw a posting and went to what would be technically the open call for it. And it's kind of pay by play, you know, you pay for the listing and you submit that way. They were like, you are a little young. And I was like, well, fresh out of college. So, and, you know, and then through that, they believed enough in me to give me a place in the cast. And it was fantastic. It really, and that's a great show as well. You know, for a young person coming out of college, Sweeney Todd, whoa.
It's a lot.
Learning that music is insane. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very dark, but it's definitely pays off.
Who were you in the show?
I was ensemble and covered Tobias. Yeah.
Great. Of course you did.
Yeah.
Handsome, well, Matthew.
Again, at that point, I was looking like a baby, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long were you performing there before you went out international?
So that was only a few months gig. That was only like a temporary gig.
Were you? Okay. So like, yeah, let's do that. So it was a temporary gig. Are you like... Now, I can't imagine, but maybe, you know, we all have it. Self-doubt. Were you living in London? Were you commuting?
Yeah.
Were you, you know, what was the self-doubt? Were you like, I'm going to give this a few years and then maybe change career fields? You know, like you're the first person in your family to perform like this.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, technically I was living where I studied at college. I was living about 20-ish minutes on the train away from London. And it's expensive to commute in. It's expensive to live even in the outskirts of London.
Oh, yeah.
And I think after, I think it was about a year or so, I moved back home to my family's home. Because you rent and it kind of like, it all depends. You know, you have that survival job and sometimes that's not paying the bills. Especially not if you're still having to pay to commute to go into London for your auditions and then you're missing a day of work, so on and so forth. But realistically, you know, every day you have self-doubt. You go to these auditions and by that time I had an agent and they were great. You go in, you can, we were speaking about this earlier, you can sing as much as you want.
Yeah, if you have an appointment.
Yeah, it's not like
in London.
Yeah, it's not like eight bars. Thank you very much.
You can sing all of Soliloquy. Yeah, from Carousel.
You get the full 9 minute Gethsemane. So it's definitely like worth your time and money.
Yeah,
you know, to go in and you feel like accomplished after the audition.
Sure, sure.
You know, and if not, then you can just putz around in the city and make a day of it. But yeah, there's a lot of self doubt, especially after, you know, you get these. You can get a few gigs back to back, but then you realize that only maybe 8 months, 9 months have gone by and you've done, you know, three shows, which is great because then you've got that stuff on your resume. But ultimately, you're looking for that maybe open-ended contract, you know, in the West End or whatever. And that really just wasn't clicking in place for me. And I was, you know, losing a little bit of patience and still really trying hard to kind of balance both worlds of working, earning money, and auditioning at the same time. So then... interesting thing happened and I was just, I think it was my birthday and a Royal Caribbean audition came up for their brand new show, which was Saturday Night Fever on the Liberty of the Seas, great ship. And I went in thinking that, you know, I'm just going to do this. Mm. It's something different and I'll see what that side of the market is like. But this was a day after my birthday and I went out the night before and everything in my gut told me, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go out tonight, enjoy my birthday with my friends, maybe get a little tipsy. And then, we'll see about it in the morning if I really still want to go. And all my friends were like, no, it's good. You should definitely go and have a peek in and sing for them. Just see what comes of it. And, you know, I'm so glad I did because lo and behold, everything they're on unraveled for me, and that's why I'm here today. You know, I met my wife on that cruise.
Yeah.
That started my career as far as, you know, I did five cruise ships with two different companies and best years of my life. You know, I've traveled the world. It's been insane ever since then. So that was definitely a good decision. So I guess, you know, when you say you have doubt, you know, you always have doubt, and it's like that one night where you're like, I've got that audition tomorrow, I can go in or I can just stay at home. You know what I mean? Sometimes it really is just get your brain around it. What's 5 minutes? You know what I mean? Like get out of bed, warm up, do your prep, learn your material, and honestly go in thinking that you could or couldn't get this job and you either do or don't have to get the job and you just relax about it. You don't have to overthink anything. You know, I think definitely in my older years, as it were, I feel like that's how I live now. You know, live like, I feel like I want to be able to choose the shows that I'm applying for, and it doesn't have to be go for absolutely everything. You know, you're most confident when you know that you have a shot at that show, and therefore it doesn't seem like a waste of time. It feels like you've done your best, and that's great, and there must be another reason as to why you did or did not get that job, you know.
Okay, so right after college, was there, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, what were your goals right out of college and how did they adapt and how did you allow them to change?
Sure. Well, everyone at college, especially around London, you know, it's like West End, West End, West End, West End. Touring is definitely a thing. And, you know, we'd spoken about this before. I think like cruising at the time wasn't something that everyone was all about. You know, it's like, oh, you're going to go and do a cruise ship. That's great. But it's not like, that's great. You should absolutely do that. Go travel the world and whatnot. And yet nowadays, it's funny that the product that these cruise lines are putting out, like Norwegian, Royal Caribbean, Disney specifically, you know, it's like they are putting so much money and effort and great teams into these shows.
And the standards
are
so high.
So high. And I've got friends that are working professionally in town here and London that were like, I'd love to go and do that. And like, no word of a lie, they genuinely would, because it's the caliber of those shows is second to none. And easily you could, it, not being funny, you could, if you could put something like that on a ship, mm-hmm. and it do so well, think of how well that could do if it was in town.
Right.
You know, so, you know, yeah, of course, everyone wants to be in town. Everyone wants to be on Broadway. Everyone wants to be on West End. But at the end of the day, it's whatever drives you. You know, yeah. I don't think the sky's the limit in that sense. It's not, because you could always get that job and it'd be like, you know what? I got Broadway or I got West End and I still want more. So where's the more? Mm-hmm. You're always going to wish that there was something else that you had done. Mm. And I'm lucky enough to be able to say that I've done a lot. I've traveled so much and met so many amazing people. And that's more gratifying to me than anything. You know, yeah. It's the people that, you know, you and I are sitting here right now, friends after so many years, and it's, and that's priceless. You know, that fills my heart more than I think a job could.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately the job is what led me to the people, but, yeah. So I really don't think that there has to be a full stop. There doesn't have to be an end goal. You know, when people say, well, where do you see yourself in? I'm like, you know, happy. That's where I see myself. Or I'd like,
you know,
to see myself. Yeah.
2019 goals for myself. Yeah. Number one on the list, happiness.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of crazy when you write it down. You know, when you write down any goal, just kind of what'll come. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And okay, so you're bringing up some really great points, because you can have dreams.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't have it for any other reason to work towards it. I mean, it's given to you for some reason. And yet if you don't get it or it changes, the difference between the people who are sitting high or sitting low are the ones who are able to adapt.
Yeah.
Not able. We're all able.
Mm-hmm.
They were willing,
yes,
to adapt.
Yeah.
And that's really what, I mean, it's just interesting, because it's not like, and I don't want to sit here and be like, you know, this is a conversation about what happens when you don't get what you originally want,
no,
which is kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's not that. It's just interesting to see where a life will go,
yeah,
if you're willing, mm-hmm, to just follow the ride, you know, yeah, ride the ride.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the stuff, you know, the people, and even the last, because yesterday, you know, we were hanging out here and we're having this whole conversation. It's just like the amount of names that you can regurgitate,
yeah,
and the appointments,
yeah,
that have come from your last gig,
mm-hmm,
are just like, yeah, right.
Right.
Good luck getting that in London,
yeah,
with like nobody name,
yeah,
whatever. You,
yeah,
know what I mean? It's, yeah, just so interesting. Okay. So then you're doing the cruise. What was the, and I really don't remember the answer to this. Mm. What was the, from Royal to Disney, what was that jump?
Sure. So did two contracts, three contracts, I'm sorry, with Royal Caribbean. Two of the same show, kind of one contract after the other, if you like. And then we just did an extra ship with just review shows on it.
Yeah.
And I think it was just time for a change. You know, as Dorothy and I, my wife and I, we were engaged at that point. And so it was kind of like, let's find something else. And I believe, I still wasn't living here in America at that point. So we technically still had to kind of bide our time, you know, while the paperwork of immigration and stuff like that was going through. So we were like, you know what? Dorothy had already done a Disney contract way before she did Royal Caribbean. So she was always raving about it. And I said, well, you know, let's have a little look. Let's see if I can audition for it and see if they take me on. I wouldn't mind trying something new, you know, like that. And they had some wonderful shows, great reputation, only heard wonderful, wonderful things. And I think that was pretty much it. It was just like, we just wanted to try something new. Yeah. And like I said, we said before, that the quality of the productions on Disney Cruise Line is fantastic. And they're a great team to work for. It's just a big old happy family. And it really was. Like, the contract we had together was great.
That was a good group.
Yeah.
It makes, it's all, well, it's the whole thing about, you know, the people.
Yeah.
It can make or break.
Yeah.
An opportunity, you know, wonderful, yeah, opportunity.
And we had not just talented people, but just good people on that cruise, you know, and that's the big difference. Like, you can have, yeah, usually it's one or the other, right? But when you can find a harmonious group of very talented people, then you just hit the jackpot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Legendary.
Legendary.
I think is the word.
Yes.
Floating around the company, yes, hallways. Now, okay, so, and then most recently you've done Saturday Night Fever.
Yep.
Playing
Tony Manero.
Baby. And what's that? There was that other ditty that was on Broadway. I can't seem to remember. No, I'm kidding. Something Rotten.
Something Rotten.
William Shakespeare.
Yes, sir.
That was cool.
That was very cool.
It's kind of crazy to think about the way different gigs can change the game for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just being in a certain spotlight or being in a certain publication or just being in a room with a certain amount of people can really up the opportunities.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, and we're going to talk about a few different things. So I do want to start with the audition. I'm curious because you have such a sunny disposition. Mm-hmm. What is it like for you, like when you audition? What's your self-talk before you go in the room? How are you, what are you behaving? Is this conscious? Are you just being?
No, I think I'm unconscious most of the time. No, it's really like I touched on it earlier, you know, of recent days I've been just going into audition rooms thinking, and you play tricks on your mind, right? So it's like you go in there thinking, I don't need this job. Because if you go in there with that mentality, then I feel like, you know, all the barriers are down. You're going in there to perform because you love to perform. And if those people in there can see that, then hopefully that resonates through and they want to take a chance at you. And if they don't, then that's okay. You know, like you can't take anything personally. And we all do, you know, we've been there. But I feel like once you get your head around that, like it's not personal. It's not. It's just, if you're not right in one facet of the industry, it's not your fault. You know, if you're talented enough to know that you are talented, you know what I mean? If you're smart enough to know that this isn't, you know, is or isn't for you.
An understanding of your self-worth.
Yeah, 100%.
At least within the business too, you know.
Yeah, which different. Then rings back around to like, I won't now audition really for shows that I genuinely don't think I can do or are not right for me. And I think it takes a while to learn that. You know, by all means, go to any and every call for experience in audition rooms, 100%.
Yeah.
Because we only learn from that. But at this stage of the game, I just feel like, take a deep breath. You know what I mean? That's all you just have to do. Maybe three deep breaths before you go in the room.
Yeah.
And just enjoy yourself. Immerse yourself in that, however many minutes you have in that room. And especially with my most recent audition for Something Rotten before I went on tour, that was exactly what I did. That was a complete fluke as to why I got that audition in the first place. And then, but also I feel like, you know, on the other side of the table, if they're welcoming enough in the room, that makes your shoulders press down and you feel like you're wanted in that room. Like they're willing you to do well. And that can make all the difference.
Yeah. Yes. Can you explain the fluke of Something Rotten?
Yeah. So I wasn't actively looking at auditioning at all. And I went to see a friend of mine in a show over in Long Island. He'd said to me, he just booked Something Rotten on tour. And he said to me, he was like, you know, they're still looking for a Will Shakespeare. And I was like, that's cool. I was like, that's great. And I was like, but for now, I'm good. You know, I'm happy doing my thing and trying to figure out what is next for me.
Hmm.
And not to say that performing wasn't on the list. It was just, I think I got my mind in the frame that I was looking at other things past that. You know, like eventually my wife and I, we want a family. So I was weighing up the options of, is that this time? You know what I mean? Or do I continue performing for a little bit and see how things go? And hopefully it synchronizes somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
So my wife and I, we talked about it and, you know, I said, why not? So I wrote to the casting team and, luckily I just worked for them anyway. And so I managed to get an appointment and, it kind of went from there. But it spiraled very quickly. I was in a room, you know, we were in the holding room and there was so many guys, you know, maybe I think 40, 50 guys out for the same role. And I was like, wow. And I guess whoever it was before had, you know, got a different gig. So they were re-auditioning. And so they were looking like last minute for things. And I was still like, wow, these are some talented, talented people. And because you can hear right outside the rooms, you can hear people singing, et cetera, et cetera. So then as much as you prepare, you've got the packet, you've got the script, you've got the songs, and you think, I could do a good job with this. You know, I think I've cracked this and I've turned it around and I'm now excited to go in on an audition where I was a little timid to even think about the thought of auditioning again. And so I went in, even with all that what I just heard outside, you know, you've got such stiff competition. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do my best. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And let's hope that it's good enough. And, you know, sure as the day follows the night, quote unquote, something wrong. I got the call back, and then I was in the room literally with two other guys for the final callback. And it was just such a harmonious feeling going in that room, having maybe like, I think it was like 12 cast, creative.
Were Wayne and Carrie in there, the writers?
They weren't.
They were not.
Okay. At the time.
They videotaped you.
Yes, they did actually. Yeah. And then sent off for approval and whatnot.
Right.
But you know, our director, Steve Bebout, was fantastic in the room. He worked with me. Mm-hmm. And once you've got that kind of arm around your shoulder, everything changes. You are then giving your 150%, you know what I mean? You're already giving 120, hopefully getting that job, but like,
right,
that extra percentage just pushes you further and further and further, because then you've got that inner fire that is resonating throughout that room. Yeah. And if you can gain the room, you know what I mean?
If you could feel that.
Yeah, you can.
It's tangible.
Yeah, there. And then you can have fun. I mean, like the role of Will Shakespeare in Something Rotten is so much fun anyway. And so at the end, I just kind of was like, I'm going to be myself. And luckily I got to keep my accent and play off that way. And so, yeah, self-belief kind of came through in the end as well, which really, I think, really helped.
Why were you deciding not to audition? Like, what was that right before Something Rotten?
Yeah, like, so I said, I was just thinking of going a different route, you know, thinking about like long-term work. Yeah. As far as like the adult job, I always call it.
But it was that idea of not wanting to keep jumping from gig to gig. Have
something
pretty
more, much.
More
yeah.
steady.
Yeah, which is like, you know, what we spoke about at the beginning. It's like, the fight or flight kind of thing, where you just want to, you do want to throw in the towel, but not through anger, not through anything like that's anyone else's fault. It's just your choice of, okay, this has been great. What is going to be the long game, you know, like what's in there for me when I want to have a family and make a sustainable living for my family as well. And of course you can do that. You can, you know, anyone can do that in this profession if you put your mind to it and you keep booking gigs, but it's slim chance, you know? And so at that point, that's, I think, what was driving me more so to kind of leave the world of performing behind.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's interesting just to see what's thrown in your lap.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're open to it.
Yeah.
I want to switch it just a little bit to relationships in the industry, because it's funny. Like, so Wayne and Carrie Kirkpatrick, brothers, yes, they're writers of Something Rotten. Wonderful. I've had them on,
yes,
Entertainment X before. Uh-huh. And having you, you know, but you and I were talking about having this conversation,
yes,
a year ago.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh, yeah, I'll tell Wayne, you know, I'll chat with Wayne. And, yeah, like, you know, the whole thing comes together. What? And so I say all of that to say, like, that's how small our world is becoming, simply.
Absolutely.
With Something Rotten, you know, separate from Disney and these other things, mm-hmm, that we've actually worked together on. What are your views on relationships in the industry?
They're paramount. You know, I think through anything I've learned that I've had agents out here in the city, but for the most part, I enjoy finding people I enjoy, talking to people I enjoy, getting those personal connections with people, if they're willing to reciprocate, of course. And Wayne and Carrie specifically are just two very easygoing guys. They're passionate about their work. They're passionate about their family. And that means so much more when you're just having a general conversation with someone. It doesn't always have to be about work. Mm-hmm. And that's the best part, is that these are real people. You know, very successful people. However, they are real people first and foremost. And those are the best conversations that you can have. You need to go into this business thinking what you can do for someone else and not what they can do for you. You know, at the end, hopefully, you know, it merges together and you can help each other. But, you know, the relationships that we make and the people that we meet, that's what it's about. And like what I just said with Something Rotten, that's how I got the gig, because my friend had told me because of someone else that, you know, and that's kind of how it works. And then if you know someone else that you've done a job for before and done a good job, then they're more likely to recommend you than a new person, you know?
Yeah.
So it just seems like, you know, these relationships that you form are the bedrock of this industry. And, you know, everyone says it all the time. It's networking, networking, networking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you have to be sincere about it. You know, you can't just go in thinking I'm going to go and take someone out for a drink and hope that they can give me a job. That's, I don't, you know, that's not what it is. Especially, well, specifically not for me anyway. I enjoy learning about people, learning about how they got where they got. You know, everyone's story is different.
Yeah.
Everyone's struggles are different. Everyone's successes are different. And that's what makes us individual artists. And we can never stop learning from each other. You know, that's the best part. And I've traveled around the world, especially around the States, and seen so many different levels of success. You know, so many different stories of people that, you know, want to give up, or they, you know, they're going to still keep going. And even on tour, like, people write to you and they say, how do you do it? How do you, you know, stay away from your families? You know, how does it work? And you're like, you know what? You surround yourself with the best people that can propel you forward and keep you positive, which then leads back to, you know, how you said, like, about having a sunny disposition, because the way I live my life is there's always someone in the world that's worse off than you. Mm. And you have to live like that, because if you don't, you're always going to be bogged down with the negatives of having a bad day. You know what I mean? Like, everyone does. But if you can find that one little thing about your day that was great, or just even just good, you know, that can be the deciding factor of waking up the next morning and doing something really, really good. And I just think, you know, it is the people that help us through that. It's not the job, you know, it's, mm-hmm. it is the people.
Where does that come from for you? Is that taught? Is that your parents, grandparents?
I mean, I guess, yes, somewhere in the bedrock of, you know, growing up, I think. But I've learned a lot of that along the way. You know, I've known a lot of people now from different countries around the world who speak so many different tongues, grew up in different neighborhoods. You know, people have come from money, haven't come from money. And so you do learn, you know, you learn to be humble, and you learn so much about other people from their, I guess it's not an easy thing to say, but through tragedy in their life or whatever it is, you know what I mean? But it just pulls you into what really matters, you know? Of course, like, our success within our industry is definitely something that, you know, we strive for. But if we can just live happy and find that one thing that keeps us going and helps us wake up in the morning and do good things, then we should always strive for that.
Mm. That's really good. I think we should end there. I'm teasing. No, you're absolutely right, though. I mean, at the end of the day, that's all it is.
Yeah.
You know, being happy, sharing that happiness with someone else, and having the view of, you know, you help enough other people get what they want, mm-hmm. you'll get what you want.
Yeah.
It's just the numbers game. I mean, that's just how it works.
Yeah.
What have you learned about, and this might be a roundabout question of something you've already answered, I'm curious if something else comes from it. What have you learned about human nature from your travels, or human communication?
Elaborate a little bit.
Okay. So, for instance, you're from England, right?
Yeah, yeah,
you're
yeah.
here in America. What matters to an American is different than what matters to someone from Kent.
Yeah. Okay.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
Versus you've met people from freaking the Philippines, Malaysia, you know, South Korea.
Yeah.
What are you seeing? What are you learning? What have you experienced? Maybe a story, anything that comes to mind.
Okay.
In the differences of what matters to different people around the world. I'm just so curious because you've traveled so much.
Yeah, for sure. So that's a great question.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So last week, I had the privilege of being around my family. My wife's family, we all came together for my wife and I's 5-year anniversary. And it's amazing because ultimately everyone gets on so well together. But when you see people from different corners of the globe coming together and, you know, all the little idiosyncrasies come out and you see how relaxed some people can be, it's almost like, what do you want to do today? Ah, we don't mind. Or, you know what? I've got a full itinerary planned. Let's go do it. Mm. And to see that merge, it's very rare that everyone's going to be on the same page, you know, because I feel like my family back in England, very easygoing. My dad is a personal business owner. My mom's worked her whole life, you know, to support my sister and I. They're always on the go, you know what I mean? They're always go. And so, like, vacation time is so precious, really. And it's almost like you don't know what to do with your body when it shuts down. of course they, you know, they have great aspirations in life and things like that, but it's definitely a more relaxed feel as far as like what comes day to day. So coming out for like, you know, leaving England and coming to America just really like it lit a fire under me. Especially New York, I came to the city and I was like, wow, everyone is living for the day, you know?
Hustle.
And you know, you walk down, you know, 8th Avenue at 9 o'clock, you know, when we go to auditions or whatever, and no one looks up, you know, they're either on the phones or, you know, they've got the coffee in hand, they're going.
Yeah.
You know, no one's really just kind of, I guess, embracing the day in a
enjoying
sense.
Enjoying the moment.
Yeah, which is another thing, you know, like it's what drives you. But being out in South Korea recently as well is the complete opposite. You know, takeaway is not a thing. You don't, if you go into a Starbucks, you actually sit down in Starbucks. You know, you don't take Starbucks with you. I don't think I ever saw anyone with a cup of coffee in their hand outside a Starbucks. You know, you just, you take the moment. If you're going to go and drink with someone, you go drink with them.
Yeah.
You know, you take the time. It's not a passing thing. It's not like just a quick catch up. It's a purposeful meeting. So it is interesting when you can travel, how you see how people react just in daily life, you know.
Has that affected the way you communicate with others or changed it?
I feel so. Yeah. I feel like, that opens my eyes to, you know, the possibility of like taking things a little slower sometimes and embracing people more so than anything.
Yeah.
And not taking anyone for granted, you know, like I think when I got back from Korea, I was picking up the phone and trying to catch up with as many people as possible, mainly because I'd been away for a good chunk of time. But, but because I was like, you know, we don't have an infinite amount of time on this earth. And I know that's a little heavy, but it's, you know, it's about like, why did I take time to get to know these people if I'm just going to have one quick phone call a year with them, you know?
Right.
You know, throughout the day, I know everyone has their own busy lives and stuff, but we really should take more time to see our friends and see our families. And that becomes ever more apparent to me as I live in another country from my family growing up.
Have you or how have you gotten better at listening? Or is that something that's been cultivated in conversation? Like really hearing what someone has to say, understanding what there's, you know, instead of just like, I hear you. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, no, I actually, that infuriates me when I see people that are checking out as I'm saying something. And listen, everyone can take a different amount of time to say something, but ultimately whatever anyone has to say is of importance, right?
Yeah.
Unless they're saying it for a reason that's, you know, very selfish or whatever it is. And you can sniff that out or whatever.
But you can feel it as they're walking up.
Yeah. But even then, you should give people your, you know, undivided attention, just because if you respect that person anyway, at least, you know, it could be that one day your friend's crying for help and you really are the only ears that they have that day.
Or the only person that's listening.
Yeah.
That's something that's really come up in my life more recently, to like understand that, like, you know, if you say to me, hey, Clay, I'm a little down today.
Yeah.
The conversation you've had with yourself to get that out of your mouth is a lot's going on. You're upset. It's bothering you so much. You can no longer keep it in your mind and you have to say it. But maybe depending on who you are, you don't want to be a terrible burden. So you say, I'm a little upset today.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been a conscious thought in my mind when I'm communicating with people, like to hear what they say and then to really realize that there's a lot of dialogue going on in the brain before it comes out of the mouth.
Yeah.
So if someone's like doubting themselves a little bit about a career field, it means they've been thinking about it for a hot minute and it might be more than what they're leading it on, you know, leading on to say or whatever.
100%.
I just think that's so interesting because you're a really great listener.
Hmm.
I think that makes a great communicator. Yeah. Obviously you're a great communicator. You make a lot of friends. Like there's certain people, it's like, it's conscious for some people. It's unconscious for others or subconscious or whatever consciousness. And it's just, you in particular have so many different friends in so many different fields and they're all nice people.
Yeah.
It's really like, and that's what I love about this conversation today. Like we're not going to sit and talk about that moment on stage left in Something Rotten. I want to know, you know, about what really keeps you going forward. And I'm saying thank you for sharing all of this.
Yeah, of course.
It's so enlightening to me and I'm sure the people listening. Okay. so people were writing to you on tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're asking you how you're keeping the positivity going. How are you, or how do you, and what is the conscious thought to stay positive in a time of negativity, or stay in the light when there's darkness around you?
Yeah.
What does that look like for Matthew?
I think, like, through doing different contracts in different areas of the profession, I've become like, I don't know, like, I want to say more fatherly. It's weird, especially my last contract. I felt like a veteran anyway. I was one of the oldest in the cast. But when you see people struggling, it's not a good idea to just let them struggle. You know what I mean? You need to be their person. And not outwardly. You don't have to, you know, be that person that goes, are you okay? Is everything good? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, just be that person if they need a shoulder to cry on. But in turn, I think that helps you remain positive, because anything you've got going on, it's like I said before, there's usually someone in the world that's, you know, worse off than you are. So really just positivity, I think, attracts positivity. If you are always negative, it just eats you up. It will take you down, and it takes a long time to get back up on your feet from that. It's actually easier. I think it's easier to be positive, and that's what I like to live by, you know?
Yeah.
Just find the silver lining. Of course, you know, things are going to tick you off day to day and stuff, but you know what? Shake them off, you know?
Yeah.
And if you keep telling yourself that, it gets easier, you know? You don't have to always look at things, you know, through rose-colored glasses, but, because there are going to be times that you're not happy with something, and you should absolutely vocalize that. But especially, you know, in the entertainment industry, I think there's so much negativity, you know, there's so much disappointment that it could really just send you over the edge. And for some people, that's a big deal, and, you know, a big problem around the world for people. Like, rejection is horrible. It's horrible. But if you can find a way to put a positive spin on that, good for you. And you absolutely should, because it'll be rewarding at the end of the day. You need to get yourself, like I said, back on your feet and keep going with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's a whole bunch of, I mean, like what's on the other side of fear?
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like, what are you really afraid about before you audition for something? Yeah. Or what are you really upset about when something doesn't go your way?
Right.
Is it killing you? Yeah. Are you going to die?
Right.
You know, if that's a situation, then that's a different conversation.
Absolutely.
But if it's not going to kill you, it's okay.
Yeah.
It'll change.
Yeah.
Come at it from a different angle. Come at it from the top down, bottom up, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm curious, how are you finding the silver lining in this whole citizenship immigration? I know it could be a separate episode.
Yeah, that's another thing.
All in itself.
Yeah.
But that's something you're actively going through.
Yeah. It was, you know, in the first case, it wasn't easy moving out to the US, but it was the decision I made to be with my wife, and I don't regret a single day of it. I've met some wonderful people since I've been here. I've done some very enjoyable performing contracts, and I, you know, it is all worth it. It is, but it's very tough. It's tough to kind of get knocked back all the time when you think you're doing the right thing, you know.
When you are doing the right thing based on
I've said to a lot of people recently, you know, you can work, you can pay your taxes and live day to day like cookie cutter as you hope the country would like you to, but sometimes it's not enough to tick all the boxes, and that's harsh. But you know, while I'm sitting here, I've got to find a positive spin on it, and if that's where my life is going, then I'll choose a different direction. I can still be in this country and do what I want to do as a permanent resident, but I can't vote just yet. But we won't talk about any of that, because I know
none
how
of that.
I would actually like to touch on something like you said on tour, like you know you get spoken to by various people from who come to see the show and stuff like that. And a young lad wrote to me and he said his father wasn't very pleasant to him and his mother, and yet dancing was kind of like the only, or performing I should say, more less specifically, but was the only thing that kind of kept him out of the dark. And he said, like, how do I continue doing this and find joy in life, and, you know, help my mother out and all that kind of stuff. And I said, well, does your mum love what you do? And he said, absolutely. And I said, well, then that will help her. You know what I mean? If you continue doing what you love, don't give it up for someone that doesn't believe in you. You know what I mean? Just because one person doesn't believe in you, you know, that's no excuse to give up on what you love. And if that brings you positivity, and that helps kind of pull away from all that negative home life, then you should absolutely keep going with it. That's not for anyone else to decide. You know, and I definitely grew up with problems, you know, when I was dancing, you know, growing up through my early teens, and you get bullied and all that kind of stuff, but that shouldn't be a reason to give up on something, because that phases out, you know, that will phase out. And I had the best years of my life pushing through that. Mm-hmm. Because you feel so accomplished at the end of the day, knowing that, all right, you know, this is something I love, and I've actually pursued it, and no one's going to stop me from doing it. And if that's the building block of, like, keep going, you know, throughout your adult life, then I'm glad I did it. But that's what I'd say to anyone that has a question about, or they're, you know, wondering if it's genuinely for them, or if you know, if negativity does creep in, with especially within your household, should you keep going? 100%. If it's what's right for you, and if it's what is your spark, and takes you out of the darkness, then absolutely.
It'll just make you stronger.
It absolutely will. Yeah.
I love that. Mm. I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up something to do with fitness, considering that's, I mean, well, here's the thing. So we're going to talk about fitness, but the other question for you is, when we're not talking about performing, when you're not doing performing,
yeah,
what do you do for fun?
I go to the gym.
I mean, yes, he answered the question correctly.
Yeah.
No. Okay. So then what does it look like for you? What is your, how many days a week are you working out?
Pretty much. I try to do six days a week. On tour, that was pretty tough. You know, on the ships, when we were working on the ships, you know, we had the gym like right underneath us. So it was great. We'd go as many times as we want.
We slept on top of it.
Yeah. Sometimes twice a day we could go.
Oh yeah.
But on tour, that was tough, you know, and that was honestly, like, that's my vice. That was the first thing that I would look at when I saw our schedule. I was like, all right, does this hotel have a gym that we're staying in, or do I need to look around the theater that we're performing in to see if I could work out around there? And, you know, I would pay like, you know, 10, 15 bucks just to go work out. But like, that would push me through the day. That is my thing. That's my positivity thing that will help me get in the right mind frame, especially if I'm having a bad morning, or, you know, things are kind of crashing down. That releases something in my brain that's like, it's all good. We can carry on now. You mm-hmm. know.
Would you say you're addicted to it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a healthy addiction, but yeah.
Well, of course it is. I mean, yeah. It's, you know, it's a healthy addiction.
Yeah.
But I mean, because I, like, you know, is there days where you don't want to go? You know what I mean? That you push yourself to go, or no?
I'm the
because
worst.
Because you're really.
Yeah. I'm actually, unless I can't walk, I think there will be no excuse to never go. even I've done the worst things, and, like, you know, when I've got like the flu or whatever, and I just push through, and all right, that might be bad for people around me, but I'll keep my head down, keep my hoodie up. But, you know, even the doctors say, like, you shouldn't go if you're sick. And I'm like, I understand, but guess what? I'm going to feel better after I've had a workout. So
hello.
You got to do what you got to do for yourself, right?
Yeah. Yes. Are there any common pieces of incorrect advice you've heard about fitness, or where to begin?
Where to begin, really. But then again, you know, everyone thinks they're a professional, and it's fun. Like, as a certified personal trainer, I'm still learning. I'm learning every day from people, and I watch people in the gym. It's like, you know, when you go to watch a show, you're always kind of, in a sense, critiquing quietly what you're seeing on stage.
Sure.
Because that's, you know, the nature of the business.
Yeah.
But I'm doing that in the gym all the time. And, you know, but like when I'm training my clients, you know, I try and give them the best advice for them. You have to tailor make something for them, because it's called personal training for a reason. It's not just, I'm going to give you the same thing I give everyone else, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully it works for you. But yeah, it is funny when people say, wow, this really works. You know, this really works. And I'm like, yeah, but for who? You know, and you could read every review online. You know, and that's a good thing. You should read magazines and articles and stuff about, like, new workout procedures and what's cool in the market, I guess. But yeah, there's it's an interesting field as well. But it's, you'll never stop learning, and it's always great to go hand in hand with being a performer, especially dancers, that you should keep in check with your body and know how to rectify something, especially if you're injured, broken, you know, whatever it is. It's always handy to know all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Do you have any like apps or books or websites that you're frequenting for information on fitness?
Yeah. I mean, I read all like the muscle and fitness, through NASM, which is, my personal certification. I get magazines that come through,
right,
more like a science base, which is really nice. And yeah, I use Body Space and things like that to track my workouts, and it shows you like the parts of the body that you worked.
What is that? What is Body Space?
So it's just like, it's a training app. You can find exercises in there, and it kind of shows you how to go through them and has links to videos if you wouldn't know how to do that, which is very great. Because some people just don't know. They don't know how to do things, and hence, I guess, why personal trainers have jobs. But for the most part, it's just a way to track record of what you've lifted, how much you've lifted, things like that.
Yeah.
And there's cardio and there's all that kind of stuff on there. But it's just like a workout builder. And it's good for me just because like I like to have a regime. I like to have a set thing that I'm doing that day. And you just input all your information and you can always go back to it. And it's to the date that you've started, it has a record of every single thing that you did on there and how much weight you lifted, et cetera, et cetera. So it's always nice. That's a really a cool app to have.
Yeah. I mean, there's a funny in between in my mind because we can either go super far into the conversation of fitness and discuss different exercises that you're prescribing, or keep it like, where can you find information if you want to continue on?
Yeah.
And so what would be, and I know we're going to hit like the social media links afterwards and everything on where to find you, but in terms of more information about fitness regarding you, is there a place to look?
But only on my, you know, my Facebook, my Instagram,
okay,
stuff like that. Yeah.
Matthew Baker.
Yeah. Cause I've been, you know, out of the city for some time. So it's tough to keep like a home base. So
it is.
Yeah, it's just the best way that people contact me is through email or, through Instagram now. That's the way the kids do it. So
isn't it?
I guess that's what we should be doing.
It is. There's I mean, you know what? This is, well, first of all, this has been a really great conversation.
Yeah.
We've gone all over.
We have.
And I love it.
We've tracked the globe.
I really love it. I have a few more questions before I jump to them. Is there anything else you want to touch on just through the conversation that we've had in different points? Is there anything else you want to go back to, or have you really?
No, I think we've
covered it.
We've covered it.
Okay. So as we're wrapping up, mistakes made that have proved essential in learning. Are there any stories that come to mind?
Mistakes made. I don't necessarily think so, because you know what? At the end of the day, through your mistakes, you can rectify and build upon it if you choose to do so.
Sure.
And so therefore, I don't look back on my career thinking that I've made mistakes. Of course, there are probably some contracts here and there or things that you've said to people that you're not proud of. But, you know, we make mistakes every day. Everyone makes mistakes. And if you own up to them, apologize for them straight away and understand them, then, you know, that's the best policy, I think. You know, there's no point in dwelling on it because everyone's going to be living their lives tomorrow anyway. And, you know, I think through that, those people on the other side of that have probably also done things they're not proud of or said things they're not proud of. So realistically, no, there's no regrets.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we can live like that because then we'd never move on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need to do, is we need to push forward, you know, as a world, as a country, whatever you want to look at it. So yeah, no.
Favorite books?
I'm not an avid reader, but my favorite book as of this day is Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, the co-creator of Nike. A great business book. You know, it's about his story of the creation of the brand and how, you know, nothing stopped him from getting what he wanted. A lot of things stopped him actually from getting what he wanted at the beginning. But then the perseverance of, again, waking up the next day. If something didn't go right for you, let's try something else. Let's work it out. But actually, it's more about making the best of a bad situation as far as, you know, the in depth, it was kind of about running shoes and how you could help people, how people were running and things that shouldn't be running. And it's about comfort. It was about speed. It was about all different kinds of things to make runners better at what they do. And evidently changing the market. And they didn't really want a multi-million dollar company. It wasn't that. It was just about being great at what they did, you know? And mm-hmm. I think that's something to live by as well. You know, you don't have to make millions of dollars or pounds or whatever to be happy. You need to just be happy knowing that whatever you've done is the best you can do and that you're successful at it. And whatever that success feels like, even if it's just gratification and a full heart at the end of the day, then that should be enough, you know?
Yeah. Now, this is funny. You did a little stint with Nike. Yes? No?
Yeah. Yeah. I used to work as a training specialist and a design consultant for the Nike ID when that first came out. That was back in England.
Yeah.
Way before I even came out here. Yeah.
You know, it's so interesting. As a performer, there's so many different jobs you mm-hmm. hold.
Yeah.
Like, even for, and they're never long.
No.
You know, some are like long, which is in our mind 2 years.
Yeah.
Other people would say like, yeah, I was in that position for 10,
yeah.
you know, years. And it's really so quick and yeah. how many different things. Like just to think that, you know, the recording date of this is 2019.
Yep.
We met in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So much.
Yeah. I've probably had 10 jobs since then, you know, in various different fields and oh, happy for each of them.
Yeah. Know? And they move so quick.
They do move so quick. But like, you know, soak up that knowledge. You never know where your life's going to go one day. And that, you know, I think that's brings me back to like what I was saying earlier about like, if you have choices to make, then, you know, then at least then know that how much you've taken in, you can push into that new career or whatever, you know, like you've got a background and you've got a resume to build off of. And you're not just like, oh, I've only done one thing my whole life. And now what? Go back to school. You know what I mean? Spend 3 or 4 years in school and nothing wrong with that if you've got time. But, you know, while we're performing, I think it's a great thing to just grab from different areas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never stop learning.
Never stop learning. Final question.
Yeah.
Metaphorically speaking, if you could put a word or a phrase, what did I tell a joke?
No, it's just like Jim Carrey, like metaphorically speaking.
Metaphorically speaking.
Yeah, yeah.
If you could put a word or a phrase on a billboard,
yes.
It's just so funny. You've completely shooken me up. No.
Not stirred.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah.
So, word or phrase on a billboard, millions of people to see. Does anything come to mind?
Yeah. Stay humble. It's something to live by. I tell myself that every day. Stay humble. Just enjoy the ride. Enjoy the people around you. Don't take anything for granted. You know, embrace people. Embrace like what people are giving you. Don't ever think that you're better than what you are. Unless that's something that you really, you know that you can harness in a good way, then just be a good person, you know, just try and strive for that. And then hopefully that resonates and hopefully everyone does the same thing. But yeah, stay humble.
I love it.
Mm.
And you are definitely, you can hear it. No. Where can we find you on the social media webs? Like what's your Instagram handle?
So currently Matthew P. Baker, 88.
88.
Yes.
And Facebook, Matthew Baker.
Yeah, it's just Matthew Baker, yeah.
It's all over.
Yeah.
This is great. Matthew, is there anything else you want to touch on before we finally wrap this bad boy up?
No, I think this bad boy has been wrapped.
I love it.
Yeah.
You're a great guy.
Thank you, Clay.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Matthew Baker.
You've been listening to Entertainment X, the podcast. You can follow Entertainment X on Instagram at @_EntertainmentX_. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join Clay next week for another Curiosity Conversation on Entertainment X. Thank you for listening.